It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to the next room. It's always a good day when I can step out into my small little studio and I've got my doggie down by my feet. We took a nice walk this morning. I got to check on her. Yeah, she's just playing with one of her bones, which is a good thing. So I have all her toys down there and I have little treats, but so far so good. I actually recorded a show earlier this week and she was just awesome. So she's sort of like my little studio mascot, and I love having her here because I have my air conditioner on because it's been warm in San Diego, and sometimes my feet get cold. I'm always barefoot, so I tuck them underneath her. She's my foot warmer, and my husband's like, "You're ridiculous, Jane. Turn the air off." And I'm like, "No, because then it'll get hot." Okay, so welcome to the next room. Super excited. I love it when my very cool, amazing friendships and friends connect me with another interesting person. And this one is one of that, you know, one of those situations. My good friend, Barbara Urbanis, who I absolutely adore and love. Barbara and I were, we were roommates back when we were just kids in our 20s. And oh man, I just love her so much. I absolutely, she's just one of the sweetest, most gentle, loving people. And she's actually been on the show. We talked to her after her mother passed away and got a really great story from her about how they treated her mom in her final hours and then after her beautiful mother, Jane, passed along and crossed over. So anyway, so Barbara introduced me to another Barbara. And this is, I need to be able to pronounce your last name. You just told me it is Bartolome. Barbara Bartolome, is that correct?
You got it.
That's great. Barbara Bartolome. And Barbara has a really fascinating story, and I'm really excited to get into it. Barbara had an NDE. So if you don't know what that little acronym stands for, it's a near-death experience. And she actually flatlined during a medical procedure when she was in her early 30s. And when she came out on the other side, she kind of reinvented her wheel, and she is now the founder and leader of IANS Santa Barbara, which we're going to find out all about what IANS is. So Barbara, welcome to the show, and thank you to my other Barbara for connecting us.
Thank you, Jane. I'm excited to be here.
Barbara, talk to me about, well, first of all, let's get right to the flatlining. So you go to the hospital, you're just having, was it a routine procedure? What happened?
Well, I had ruptured a disc in my lower back and they were going to do surgery, a laminectomy discectomy at St. Francis Hospital in Santa Barbara on December 8th, 1987. And I was 31 years old. So they asked me to come in on the 7th, on the day before, and they had me come in the late afternoon, and they wanted to do one more diagnostic test before they actually did the surgery the next day. So they took me into an x-ray room, and they told me I had to hold very, very still. They numbed an area at the back of my neck, and they inserted iodine dye into my spinal cord. And what the point was, it's called a myelogram, and they were going to tip the table and have the iodine dye flow down my spine to the area where the disc had blown to see if when the disc blew, it had damaged my spinal cord. If the dye leaked out, we were in trouble. If the dye stayed in, we were okay. So they proceeded to start tipping the table, and both the neurosurgeon and the orthopedic surgeon that were going to be doing the surgery the next day were in the room with two x-ray techs and a nurse. So the x-ray tech began tipping the table, and unfortunately, no one really was watching the table and paying attention. It was just a routine procedure, and the x-ray tech had his button, his finger on the wrong button. So the table began tipping the opposite direction and the dye started flowing into my brain.
Oh no, yeah. This is so weird. Okay, so at this point, what happens to you?
Well, I moved because I would have headaches for months afterwards. So I didn't want to bother them. The two x-ray techs were talking to each other and not looking at me. And so I was kind of not wanting to be a baby. And so I felt funny, and I didn't know whether that was normal.
And this is during the procedure?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they tip the table the wrong way. The dye goes into your brain.
It's very slow, yeah, because the table's tipping very slowly.
Okay.
Yeah, so I felt very odd. And finally, when I decided that I should say something to them, I couldn't actually speak. Another neurosurgeon had told me that the dye changed the pressure within my brain, causing malfunction all over in my brain.
Dang.
So I couldn't speak, and I couldn't reach out and touch them to tell them that something was wrong. And I started hyperventilating, and my eyes were rolling to the back of my head. And that's when they realized, they heard me breathing very quickly, and they realized, so they stopped talking, and one guy leaned over me and saw my eyes were rolling back and I was hyperventilating. And he leaned back to look to see where his thumb was on the machine. And that's when the last thing that I saw before I died was him making this astonished look on his face like, oh my gosh. And then click, I was out of my body up on the ceiling and looking down at everybody.
Yeah, okay, so this happens, and did your heart stop? Do you know?
Yes, I was flatlining for 8 to 10 minutes.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you're flatlining. So then all of a sudden, you're up on the ceiling. So now, wow, this is crazy. So what happened?
Well, I looked down at everybody. I had been real panicked in my body. And the second that I got on the ceiling, it was completely calm. I felt absolutely loved, wrapped in a warm blanket. I felt perfectly fine. And I looked down and I said, huh, if I'm up on the ceiling and they're down below calling code blue, I think I just died.
Wow.
And right then when it happened, there was this feeling of a being next to me. And to me, in my life, I felt like it was like God, because it felt so incredibly loving and accepting and just, oh my gosh, so huge. And I felt like I'd been connected to this being way before my life on earth, and that I would be connected to the being way beyond my life on earth. And so I began calmly talking to the being and saying how much I wanted to go back into my life. And I had a 5-month-old baby daughter.
Oh my
goodness.
And I
had an 8-year-old son, and I was in a very traumatic marriage at the time. I was married to an engineer, and he had problems with anger and control and manipulation. And I was trying really hard to do all sorts of things to, you know, compensate and help him to get to a better point. And it just wasn't working. And I'd been hit many times and been hurt many times. And so I was talking to this being saying, if I'm not there to protect my children from this situation, then they won't grow up to be the good human beings they're capable of being if they're exposed without my protection. So, yeah.
So this is all like conscious thought that's occurring.
Yes.
As you're flatlined, your body, you're gone.
Yeah, okay. Down below, my body just seemed like a wetsuit to me. It literally didn't have any, I didn't care anything at all about it. Everything that I was up on the ceiling next to the being who I am was up there.
So you're having this, this energy is next to you, like a light energy, or could you actually physically see a form, or you just were aware that there was an energy there?
Yeah, just as if, you know, someone that you love and know for a zillion years is standing next to you. You don't have to look at them to know who they are.
Right.
I never and felt like I had to look to see if there was a light or, you know, there was any presence or anything. I felt it so strongly. I knew who it was.
Right.
So I just talked. I just talked to the being and said I wanted to go back.
Sure, because you wanted to protect your children. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so now what's happening? Are you also viewing them flipping out and
everything
code, what is it called, blue, when all the lights go off and it's like, you know, somebody is flatlined and it's just this crazy energy at the hospital.
They were flipping out, and it seemed really obnoxious below me. And they were calling out for things, and this nurse was on the phone yelling for a defib unit stat. And the two extra guys were doing CPR, and the doctors were yelling orders. And the nurse came in with an oxygen card, and they put an oxygen mask on my face. And then the guy came in with the heart monitor, and when he connected it up, I actually saw and watched my own flatline. I didn't figure out what it was for a little bit of time. I actually interestingly, said to the being as I was talking to him, what is that he's doing? Because I understood everything else that was going on, but I didn't understand what these little white things were the guy was putting on my chest. And I was actually moved down in front of the heart monitor. So my perspective, instead of being up above my body straight ahead looking down, I now was in front of this box. And when the guy flicked the little toggle switch on the side of it, I watched the little green line, little green dot go on a straight line across the screen. And there was this monotone sound. Damn. And I didn't realize what it was at first. And then about the third pass over, I went, oh, that's supposed to be going up and down. Yeah. Heart is stopped. And when the minute I thought that thought, I was back up on the ceiling again next to the being. It was like I asked for to be shown something and I was shown it, and then I got back up on the ceiling again. So it was very interesting. Yeah.
Man. Yeah. So no fear or none of that, like panic or holy crap, I'm dead. What the heck?
Not a nothing. It was literally going from that panic mode in my body when I was here to this absolute kind, wonderful, loving situation where I wanted to go back into my life. So that was the intent that I was setting. But, you know, the being was just so loving and kind, and I felt no worries, no problems. And what ended up happening was that the neurosurgeon spoke to the orthopedic surgeon and said too much time was passing and that I was going to be brain dead if they didn't do something. So the orthopedic surgeon said, stand clear, to the two x-ray techs and the nurse that was standing near the front and near my chest on the table. And he stepped two steps forward and he swung his fist from behind his back and he struck the center of my chest. Wow. And I had never seen that before. I'm not a TV person. I don't watch TV much. And so I didn't know what it was. And it's called the precardial thump. They do it in a last ditch effort to restart a heart through the strike because it will shock the heart back into beating. But the very first strike didn't work. But when he struck me, I watched my body respond to that strike because your muscles are still perfectly alive and your body kind of jerks because you just were hit so hard. And up on the ceiling, the being spoke to me. And there was this just super calm voice that said, but if you go back, you'll still be in your marriage. Will you do?
Dang.
Yeah, and then I was shown all these little film clips that just flashed in front of me, but they were all incidents that had happened during the 7 years of marriage that were these traumatic incidents that kept on happening. Not every day, not every week, but intermittently they would occur when he got upset. And so I saw all the incidents, and it reminded me of what I'd been trying to forget and forgive. And what I ended up doing was having this whole bit of time to evaluate how I had tried to help my now ex-husband to make changes to his life and all the things that I had done with him, taking him to a pastor of a church, taking him to a marriage family therapist, talking to him, writing him letters that told how I felt and begging him to not hurt me anymore. And I saw all that I had done, and then I realized none of that had worked, and he was still in the same situation as after I married him. I figured out that this is what he was, and I didn't know before I married him. So it had been 7 years, and so I ended up saying to the being, after I evaluated all of that, I said, if you let me go back, I promise you that I will get strong enough to leave him, because really there had been a lot of diminishing of my personal power through those 7 years, which is very classic in abuse situations. Yeah. And so I just said, I'll get strong enough to leave him. And the second I said him, the doctor did the second precardial thump, and I literally just shut my eyes on the ceiling and opened them up, and I had the oxygen mask on my face. And I said, what just happened into the oxygen mask?
And you were back.
I was back, and the nurse leaned over and said, stop, don't talk. We need to stabilize you. And so 20 minutes later, when they took the oxygen mask off, I said, what just happened? I was up on the ceiling. I could see all of you and hear you. And the neurosurgeon was standing next to the x-ray table. So was the orthopedic surgeon. And he went, oh, brother. But that made, it was good. It was bad. They shouldn't have done that. But it was good because it made me completely say, no, she was on the phone calling for the defib unit. That lady brought in the oxygen cart. That man brought in the heart monitor. I watched it flatlining. These two guys were doing CPR. Yeah, so you're telling them
you saw everything and you're describing it perfectly.
Validated.
They had to like jaw drop and go, holy Toledo, this woman actually saw this happen. How else would you have total recall of the situation?
Well, the neurosurgeon stormed out of the room.
Of course he did.
He didn't like that at all. And the orthopedic surgeon was very kind and he held my hand and the other team stayed there. And he asked me, what did you feel and how did it feel and what did you see? And tell me again what you saw from up above. And so he validated the whole thing and I said everything again.
Wow.
And then they put me on a stretcher, took me up to my room, did the surgery the next morning, and not a single person for 4 days at the hospital would ever talk to me about what had happened. Because, of course, it was a liability issue for the hospital. I never sued anybody, but...
You think?
Nobody wanted to talk to me.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Okay, so I know this is going so fast, but I want to make sure we get to everything. So this occurs to you. You get better. You get out of the hospital, not to fast track you, but once you are out and you're back in your life, and, you know, when did you decide, like, I have to speak up? Like, this, I had a near-death experience. This is how I feel, and this is what I need to do. How long between that incident and getting involved with, founded the INS in Santa Barbara. How did that happen?
Well, at the time, I didn't talk about it. After I got out of the hospital, it took me 12 years. And what was interesting was every time I thought about it.
12 years. 12 years from you dying to...
I didn't even know it was called the near-death experience.
Okay.
There was not any information in 1987 that was out there for normal people to read about. No online stuff. There wasn't even online. So it took me about 12 years. A nurse at Cottage Hospital ended up telling me what the term was for that experience. And she and I were best friends, and we were at our daughter's gymnastics practice at UC Santa Barbara, and we were talking about her mom's impending death, and I decided to tell her. She was the first person that I told in 12 years, and she was the one who knew that it was called the near-death experience. So she's the one who turned me on to being able to find the IANS organization, that's worldwide organization, online. And it actually took me another couple of years before I started the IANS group, because a friend of mine here in town, Erin Graffy, she and I were talking about my near-death experience. Something happened where I triggered and I felt like I should talk with her about it. And she wanted to put an article into the Santa Barbara News Press about my near-death experience, which I was kind of like, no, I don't think so. But she was very insistent and they interviewed me and they did a really nice job with the article. And at the time, the person who wrote the article asked me, why are we printing this article in the news press? Why are we doing this? And I said, well, let me get back to you on this. Let me call someplace and then I'll check with someone and I'll call you back. And so I called the IANS organization and I said, how hard is it to start a group in Santa Barbara? Because I knew there were groups in Seattle and Chicago and Virginia Beach and all over. And so they said, it's really easy and we'd love to have you. And so I then told the writer for the article that I was going to start an IANS group, and that's what started the whole thing rolling. And it's been almost 10 years now. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Good for you. I mean, you took this harrowing experience, and I mean, it took you a while, but I would think that it would take a while because, first of all, you're a mom. You're in a smaller community. Santa Barbara's a lovely, lovely community, but you probably were like, I don't want people looking at me weird. I don't want my kids to say your mom's a freak. I mean, people can do all kinds of weird, you know, we fear what we don't know. And back then in the late 80s, you know, like you said, there weren't a lot of resources to, you know, you had this out of body, literally out of body experience. And so I get it. I get why you were quiet for that long. Okay. So here we are. You are now the founder and leader of IANS Santa Barbara. What does IANS stand for?
International Association for Near-Death Studies.
Okay. Awesome.
It was started in 1977 by five researchers, and they were doctors as well. They'd seen their patients have near-death experiences. And Raymond Moody, he was a doctor and a psychologist, He was the one who named it near-death experience. It really should be a death experience for a lot of people because they are actually
dead. Yeah, it's not near. You died, girl.
but it's kind of misnamed, but they, this, so, you know, in the public's eye, it's, okay. It's well known now.
I see. So, okay, so iansb.com, if somebody wants to check it out. So it's iandssb.com is your organization. And if someone wants to personally reach out to you, I'm going to give them your personal email because you said you check it more often. It's Sunny S.B. Barbara, which you are very sunny. Sunny S.B. Barbara@gmail.com. All right, so Barbara, this is just so fascinating. I wish I had an hour. What, if any, do you have any lingering side effects from actually having your heart stop?
Absolutely. They've done a lot of research on them. My biggest one is what you call intuition, but for me, it doesn't feel like it's coming from me. I have gotten incredible input, what I call from the other side, and you can call that, you know, whatever you want to think about it. But I actually have had incredible moments. I'm thinking about writing a book called The Amazing Life of the Double Dead Redhead, because I actually had two NDEs. I ended up finding out at about age 55. I'd never told my family about my near-death experience, but my older brother decided to disclose to me that I had died when I was 18 months old. And that was a real shocker because I had no idea about that. But the intuition that I had ever since I was a young person had always felt uncomfortable to me because I didn't know why I knew things that were going to happen before they happened. And it's been amazing to have these things occur. My husband is an ex-NBA basketball player, and he is my current husband, and we've been married 28 years, and he's continually shocked at the things that I'll know something's going to happen, like that there's something up ahead that's very dangerous and we need to slow down, and it avoids us getting into a major car accident. And he just looks at me and goes, I can't believe that you can do this. It's just amazing.
I love The Amazing Life of the Double Dead Redhead. And if you know, I'm going to get after you because I'm currently writing a book right now. You need to. You really do. This is it's very important. I think more so now than ever, this conversation about death and dying and afterlife and grief. And it's just, the lid is off. It's no longer a freaky conversation. It's very, very much, it's important because it's teaching us how to live richly while we're here, you know, instead of fearing this unknown, you know, because you don't, okay, I'm going to ask you, do you have any fear whatsoever of what is next?
Nothing whatsoever. And in fact, I can tell you what I did in Santa Barbara. I happened to see four guys chase down a fifth guy on State Street in Santa Barbara, right in front of the Saks Fifth Avenue store. And the four guys were beating up the fifth guy. Wow. And I had my two daughters in the back of my car, and I stopped my car just right across from them. And I yelled, "Stop that right now." Guys didn't stop. I got out of my car, went over and grabbed two of those guys by their sweatshirts and yanked them off of the guy that they were punching. And the other two guys saw the fury in my face because I'm 5'9" and I'm a power girl. And they ran, all four of them ran away. So I was left with the victim. It turned out they weren't just punching him. They were stabbing him. It was a gang initiation.
Oh, my gosh.
I put him in the front seat of my car, drove him to the hospital. He had a punctured lung plus 30 other punctures.
Oh, my
goodness. I had absolutely no fear over my own life. Right. I just cared about what was happening to him.
You don't mess with a woman who's died twice. Let me just put that out there. You do not mess with a woman.
That's right. Don't.
Don't you mess with The Amazing Life of the Double Dead Redhead, coming up on Netflix. Honestly, it's just perfect. Okay, so no fear of what's next. So that is a perfect lead-in to the next room. What, Barbara Bartolome, is in the next room for you?
The next room has nothing but acceptance, love, and absolute being cherished by whoever it is that's there. And I call it God, and some other people use other names, but it is just a beautiful place that we grow our souls. And we look at our lives at the end of our many, many near-death experiencers have a full life review. I just saw all of those intricate things that needed to be addressed in my situation about the abuse. But many near-death experiencers see their entire life, and they then aren't judged, but they look at it and say, wow, I could have done better in this situation, or wow, I really made that person feel amazing, and look how that transferred to that person, making another person feel better, and that person, and that. So the good branches out, and so does the evil. So you want to try really hard to do good things in your life and contribute to other people as well as your own family and yourself. You want to do the best that you can. And then you have this amazing growth in the other side where you look at this life and say, wow, that I did this well, and that well, and this well, and then I didn't, oh, I should have done better there. So that's what I think. It's a growth, kind of a school thing that you go back to. And then I honestly think you come back here again and again and again, and you keep growing your soul.
Wow. Beautiful. I have my hand on my heart while you were describing that. I love nothing but acceptance and love, a beautiful place to grow our souls. That's really, really lovely. I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed this. And what is interesting to me is through the power of doing this podcast, I have met so many exceptional human beings. And through that, I am gaining such a wide berth of new relationships. So I just know that this is the start of a new friendship with you because, you know, I'm watching you, I'm looking at you through Zoom, and the audience cannot see you because it's a radio program, but the sincerity and the authentic description and the experience that you had is so true. It is so true for you that anyone that would ever meet you or come to hear you speak would know without a shadow of a doubt that you indeed died, went up to the ceiling and hung out with a loving blanket of a being and watched this happen and then asked to come back because you did not want your children to suffer and you knew you needed to help them grow into good human beings. So there's so much beautiful truth to watching you describe your story. So I thank you. And I think we need to have you back on because that's what I'll hear from the audience. I'll hear, can we hear more from Barbara?
So, I have a lot of stories where they've talked to me and it's been incredible, amazing things that, you know, if it didn't happen to me, I would have kind of gone, really? That person had to happen? But sure. I'm telling you, there's no reason for me to care to talk about this unless I actually had it happen. And it's the total truth. There's also a really nice YouTube video. If you just put in Barbara Bartolome MDE into the search bar on YouTube, it's had about 650,000 views.
Well, I'll embed that in the show page too. So I'll embed really the YouTube video. Yeah, I watched that. That's how I first got when Barbara introduced me and then I went and I watched the YouTube video and I'm like, oh, I have to have this woman on the show. So that's great. I'll make sure that gets added in. Barbara Bartolome, my guest today, founder and leader of IN Santa Barbara. You can reach her via email, sunnysbbarbara@gmail.com. Go check out the IANS organization. The IANS in Santa Barbara is IANSSB.com. You will be back on the show. And I love that. What we'll do is we're going to talk about the connection with the souls that have gone before us, because that is the complete genesis behind my book. It's my connection with my mother and the legions of souls that have gone, not just my direct ancestral, you know, descendants or that I'm descendant of, but everybody, you know, we're all connected, you know, and it's really quite beautiful. So we'll definitely get you scheduled when we hang up from this interview. We'll get you back on and we'll have you on before the end of the year and talk more about this. I would
Sounds
love
good,
to.
Jane. I'm glad to have a new friend in you.
Yay.
So we get to meet and be together. Okay.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Barbara. Barbara Bartolome, my guest today on The Next Room. And thank you for listening. And thank you for sharing, because I am getting such great feedback from the show. I really get a kick out of doing it. And I love it when friends connect me with another person that is perfect to come on the show. And that's, I don't have to even go look for people, which I love. It's just kind of, they come to me, which is really living a very lovely, authentic way to live is just allowing
yeah,
that.
You're planting a lot of beautiful seeds, Jane. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Okay. We'll talk to you again next week on The Next Room.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to The Next Room.